Folks, thank you so much for joining. This is Prashant Kumar. We have a couple of participants here today, and today I have a great guest with me, Jordan Shepherd, and I'm going to introduce him in a second. Prashant Kumar, I have a strong technology and management background. In the last 25 years, I worked in many corporations in the United States, you know, in management capacity. And, you know, I have passion about real estate, and I educate, you know, my investors, my friends about how real estate can bring value in somebody's life, right? I mean, I own my own portfolio of 100 units. I have 1200 units. I'm part GP in 1200 units. My competency is to do the underwriting. I remove redundancies from the process. And we do investments in multifamily as well as in assisted living space. But real passion that I have is to educate general folks, you know, my friends, family members, about how real estate, investing in real estate, you can create generational wealth, basically. And I can talk about it a lot, but today that's not the topic. Today I have, you know, a great friend of mine, Jordan Shepherd. Jordan, welcome to the show.
And thanks, Prashant.
Yeah, just a little bit about Jordan. He's the CEO and co-founder of Checkbook IRA. I know him for maybe 6 months now, but what he provides is a very powerful tool. And of course, I'm his client, but I wanted him to share how we can invest in real estate safely from our IRAs, right? I mean, he knows everything. I know a little bit, but over the last 7 years, Jordan has been involved in, you know, he has reviewed thousands of transactions, you know, with his clients for real estate, for cryptocurrency, offshore investments, things like that. He has been asked by Government Accountability Office to participate in their study, which was released in 2020 for self-directed IRA industry. I mean, he has his own company, checkbookira.com, but today it's more of an information sharing session. And I'm mesmerized by how much can you do in terms of investing from your IRA into real estate or in any other assets for that matter. So I am leaving you guys up to in the hands of very capable person, Jordan Shepherd. Here you go, Jordan. Yeah.
Hey, thanks, Prashant. Well, it's great to be here. It's always fun to talk with like-minded individuals, and hopefully out of this presentation, you guys will learn a little bit about some of the different things you can do with these retirement accounts. There's a lot of stuff you can do that is kind of outside the norm. So yeah, our company name is Checkbook IRA. I'm the CEO. My father and I founded the company, and we've been doing it now for quite a long time. I think almost 18 years now, officially, unofficially, almost 20. This is a little bit about a GAO study that was done by the Government Accountability Office, and I was lucky enough to be asked to be part of it. And that was very good. They brought with that study a lot of information or a lot of eyeballs to the self-directed community. And it's been really interesting how that's kind of paired in with crypto and of course real estate now. So essentially, our company is pretty focused on education because it's important to us, the clients, understand how these structures work. And we're happy to spend as much time as we need to and going through, you know, how they work and answering questions so that at some point, you know, you can get to the point where you can look and decide whether or not this is going to fit in with what your plans are. The first thing that I'll start with, because it's usually a little bit of a shock to people when they find this out, there really are not that many restrictions on retirement accounts when you look at the actual tax code. And this has been the case forever. So sometimes when people hear about self-directed accounts, they think, oh, well, there's like a loophole you're exploiting, or maybe some law was passed a couple of years ago that made some of this possible. But it's always been allowed. It's just for various practical reasons, it's just not as well known as, let's say, buying stock inside of an IRA. So really, for IRAs, the only, and mostly for 401ks, the only investments you can't buy are life insurance contracts. And then IRAs are not allowed to buy collectibles, although 401ks can if they're set up right. No need to rabbit hole on that. But any other asset class is permitted, right? So if it's not life insurance, if it's not a collectible, you can actually hold it inside of an IRA. There's some other limitations involving self-dealing, which we'll talk a little bit about as well. You can certainly finance investments through a retirement account, things like real estate or heavy equipment or things like that. I mean, you can even own a business inside of a plan like this, but that's a different conversation. So we'll just leave that where it sits. One of the things I would say, and this is important, it may seem really simple, but it's important to know that an IRA is actually just simply a revocable trust. And in section 408 of the code, the very first line, 408A, is it defines an individual retirement arrangement as a trust. And essentially, if this trust is set up properly, then it is granted tax exemption by the IRS as an individual IRA. Same thing with a solo 401k, which we'll get to here in a minute. But essentially, I mean, you're setting up a trust for your own benefit, putting money into that trust. And the deal with the IRS or the government really is that they will leave that trust alone and not tax it. So that money can grow tax deferred until you retire. And then as you take money out, of course, they'll tax it then. So here we go. So let's talk about what a self-directed IRA is, though, because this is where we get into being able to buy non-traditional assets with an IRA. There is really no such thing as a self-directed IRA. That's a little bit of a misnomer. It's more that you're setting up an IRA with what's called a self-directed custodian. And the best way I could think of describing it is if you had, let's say, a brokerage IRA at a, well, let's say Scottrade, and you called Scottrade and said, hey, there's a rental house down the street that I want to buy with my IRA, they would essentially say, well, look, we're brokers and we can't facilitate that. I mean, if you want to buy public stuff, we can help you there, but we're not set up to process a private investment like that into real estate through an IRA. So if you want to do that, you're essentially going to have to go off and find some other custodian that can handle that kind of transaction. So a self-directed custodian, they focus more on non-traditional investments. So they're set up so that when you set up an IRA with them, they can handle things like real estate. They can handle things like the purchase of physical precious metals or crypto or hard money lending or even stuff like offshore type investments. They typically don't manage money. They're essentially a passive custodian that when you open an IRA with them and then you, let's say, transfer money into it, they essentially just sit there and do nothing until you tell them what you're wanting to invest in. And then let's say if it's real estate, since they're holding the IRA, and since the IRA is the entity that is purchasing that piece of real estate, then they go through the entire process, sign all the closing documents on behalf of your IRA, and then that property is titled to your IRA account.
But now, Jordan, I will jump in for a second. So what you are really saying is a lot of W-2 employees, they don't even know where their money is, right? I mean, they know that their money is with some Vanguard or Fidelity account, and it's a 401k account, and when they move from one job to another job, they just move their 401k into an IRA within the same stock brokerage firm. And for them, all they know is that their IRA is with Vanguard or with Fidelity, and that's, they keep on investing in certain mutual funds or whatever, typically. And they're not even aware of the fact that they can take out this money and invest as per their convenience, you know, for, I mean, almost in any asset class, I mean, through self-directed IRA vehicle.
Right. Yeah. And just, I'm not to rabbit hole on that, but one of the reasons why in the American mind, the perception of retirement accounts almost invariably is just linked automatically to the stock market. I mean, people think IRA, you automatically think, oh, well, stocks and bonds and mutual funds. Part of that is because when these IRAs and 401k plans first came out, really the only companies that were kind of set up to hold these kinds of accounts were essentially brokerage firms. And it took a few years before people started looking at the code and saying, well, there's nothing that says I can't buy real estate. So, you know, I'm going to look out and find some custodian that will do that for me. And really in response to that need over time, these quote unquote self-directed custodians began to form up and then learn what they needed to do to process these kinds of investments. So you're right. I mean, for most people, they've never heard of this sort of thing. They don't know what's possible. And because, again, the mind, the American mind is so linked to the stock market, for a lot of people, when they hear you can do this sort of thing, they're kind of like, how is this possible? Like, it seems like you've got to be exploiting some loophole or something like this to be able to do this. And that's not the case. It's just that it's, you know, even though this industry has grown tremendously over the last, you know, 20 years that we've been involved in it, it still is a very small percentage of overall accounts. I mean, it's something like, I think it's something like 4 or 5% of all retirement funds are held in these types of self-directed accounts. So, yeah, it's certainly more popular, but it's not something that you're going to hear on like CNN or from Jim Cramer or something like that, you know. So you're right. And for a lot of people, when they work for a company and they're saving in a company 401k, you know, and they move off to another job or something, it's just usually they end up rolling it forward into the new 401k with their new company, or they just roll it out to an IRA and it just kind of sits there in some just normal stuff for a while. So, but it is pretty cool that you can do this sort of stuff, just, I mean, so long as you're doing it correctly. But the downside to self-directed IRAs, especially with real estate, is the fact, and to come back to this slide, over, it's over on the left-hand side. It's the fact that by law, you have to have a third-party custodian hold the IRA. And since the IRA is the investment entity, right, that is purchasing this or selling that or receiving rents and so forth, the problem is you have this custodian that is sort of like glued to the side of you, that anytime you want to do anything at all, buy, sell, or anything else, they have to be involved. And typically they're going to charge you transaction fees to do that. I mean, that's how they make their money. The other problem I see a lot of clients running into, especially with real estate, is just the time that it takes to get everything processed. And especially, let's say, if you're financing property, or if it's maybe a little bit more of an odd situation, holding like tenants in common, titling to property, it can get a little bit cumbersome. And we have had some clients, you know, before they had us set up a plan for them, where they would literally lose out on a deal because it just took too long for the custodian to get through what they needed to get through. And that's just kind of the nature of the beast, because again, you have this third party that has to hold the account, and it just kind of is what it is. So problem, you can set up with
Jordan, I want to say one more thing here. I know you kind of
with words over on the left hand side. Oh,
you are cutting off a little bit, sir. John, are you able to hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. Hello.
Yeah, I can. I think we were able to hear you a little bit now.
Okay. Can you hear me okay now?
Yeah. Now it is better. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry about that. I'm not sure what happened. Yeah. Just let me know if I cut out again. I'm not sure why I would be cutting out, but yeah. So hopefully that's better now. So with the checkbook IRA, as we call it, using this structure really to fix. Yeah.
You're cutting out, John Jordan. For some reason, you're cutting out.
Yeah, I'm sorry about this. I've got a good Wi-Fi signal. I'm not sure why it's cutting out.
Is it like me this? I'm cutting out or somebody else? Anybody else had trouble?
Yeah, a little bit. It is cutting out some.
Yeah, let me just check my wireless connection here.
Hey, Jordan, thanks. It's great material. Just wanted to let you know the previous slide prior to the LLC and bank slide is where it started, just in case you're able to cover that again. If not, no problem.
Okay. Now, Prashant, can you hear me better now, or is it still cutting out?
I think it is better now. It's
all right. I'll tell you what. I've got these Bluetooth earbuds. Let me take these out, and we'll see if maybe that's the issue there.
Okay.
Okay. Let me take those.
Yeah, and Victor wanted to go back one slide, Jordan, if possible.
Okay. There we go. All right, so can you hear me now, though?
Yes.
Okay, good. So the checkbook IRA, and sorry if the sound is a little bit worse, I'm using just my computer microphone now. So the checkbook IRA is really designed to solve the problem of the custodian being involved in the process. Now, of course, by law, you have to have a custodian, so they still have to be there. They still have to hold the IRA. But essentially what we do is we come in and we create an LLC. And it looks like this. So you still have the custodian and the IRA on the left-hand side, except in this case, we set up an LLC and your IRA owns that LLC 100%. And essentially, you could think of the LLC as being like a subsidiary holding company of the IRA. It is wholly owned by the IRA. The IRA is the sole 100% owner and member of the LLC. But the advantage here is that when that structure is put in place and when you take the funds that are sitting inside the self-directed IRA and you have the custodian then move those funds down into the LLC's bank account, and I kind of jumped ahead of myself there, you are the manager of the LLC. And when it's set up, you go and open a checking account in the name of the LLC and then you manage that LLC as the manager. So the idea there is to take the funds sitting in the IRA, move them down into the LLC. And now that they're sitting in a private company that you control as the manager, now the LLC becomes the investment vehicle that you use to go make the investments that you want to make. And the advantage about the custodian really from the investment process. So you are the manager, and then now the LLC is what purchases the property. And so the advantage there is that as you go out and do different investments, whether you're buying real estate directly or whether you're, let's say, investing in a syndication, the process of making that investment and then managing that asset is something that you get to do yourself. Now, there are certain limitations on that, and we'll get into that here in just a minute, but But this arrangement here, again, is really designed to cut the custodian out of whatever process you're going through to acquire whatever asset that you're going to make, or sorry, you know, whatever investment that you're going to make. So the advantages here are, again, that you get the control. Since you're the manager of the LLC, you decide what accounts you're going to open up and where those funds are going to be held. As you do different investments, you're not having to go back to the custodian and deal with them as far as getting approval for anything, as far as process any, sign anything. You also don't have to worry about transaction fees because all of the transactions are occurring inside of the LLC itself, not through the IRA. So transaction fees are only charged if the IRA is making an investment or doing something. And in this case, the IRA owns just one asset, and that's the LLC. And then the LLC may have any number of assets that it owns, but that's irrelevant to the custodian because the IRA just owns one LLC. And then obviously you have a lot more flexibility in how you can structure those. You know, you can change it, typically does, and you could you would have the flexibility to be able to, you know, admit those changes without having to start all over with the custodian. And then you're also, of course, able to invest in whatever the tax code allows you to invest in without having a custodian put any sort of special restrictions on what you can do with that account. So that's the, you know, in a nutshell. And like I said, I can certainly make this available to anybody who wants it, this slideshow. But that's really the reason why clients set up these like a checkbook IRA, is that they want to have control of the fund. Get nicked to everything. They're going to do anything with transaction fees and so forth. The flexibility to invest in anything that they might, so long as it's permitted by the code.
But the fundamental thing that he's talking about is that, I mean, those who have invested from their self-directed IRA to, from self-directed IRA to any business or in any real estate transaction, custodian takes a lot of time, right? Custodian takes, you send them the instruction, they take like 15 days to turn around and send the check if you are doing a passive investment from your self-directed IRA. By having an LLC inside your IRA, all that work, you know, your dependency on the custodian is not there anymore. Your LLC is owned solely by your IRA, and you can do a lot of things that is called checkbook. Control, right? You have an LLC, and LLC has its own bank account. And from there, you can do passive investments or buy real estate. But one thing I was asking Jordan, and he's coming online again, that what are the restrictions in terms of self-dealing? Because this LLC is owned by an IRA. What are the different restrictions that we have, which is called arm and length transaction?
Yeah, so the restrictions on these accounts center around the account owner, because what they don't want you to do is they don't want you to be dealing with your own account. And that's, it's fairly obvious why. I mean, if you don't pay tax inside of an IRA or a 401k, and if you could just in some unfettered way deal with your own account, I mean, there are a lot of games you could play and shift assets and do all sorts of things. So since this money is really being saved for your retirement account or for your retirement down the road, it would be inappropriate for you to have personal use of those assets while they're still inside the plan. And it would also be inappropriate for you to personally benefit from any investment or transaction the plan does, because your benefit is really for down the road when you retire. So what they do is they identify a certain number of people that are just off limits to the retirement plan. And it's a fairly short list. It's the account owner. So let's take myself, it would be me. I can't deal with my own IRA or 401k. If I'm married, my spouse also cannot deal with the plan. and also my ancestors and lineal descendants and their spouses. Now, in plain English, that means straight above you and straight below you on your family tree. So your parents, your grandparents, your children and their spouses, grandchildren. And then also that extends out to any sort of entity that's owned by those parties. And so what you have to understand is that those parties are totally off limits to anything that the retirement plan might do. Now, what that might look like in real life is like last week, I talked with a client who his daughter was going off to college, and he wanted to know if he could purchase a rental house in the college town there and just move his daughter into the property. Now, the answer to that is no. It's not that he can't own real estate inside the plan. It's that specifically he cannot do anything with his daughter. So even if his daughter paid just totally fair market value rent to the retirement plan, that still would not be allowed. Likewise, you couldn't, let's say, you know, have your retirement account pay off your mortgage or maybe make an investment in your own company, right? So really, retirement money needs to stay totally arm's length from whatever it is that you might be doing personally or like through any business that you might have. And then also just needs to stay away from these specific parties. Now, interestingly, there are certain family members that are left off that list. So after all, it's only straight up and down the family tree. So if you go out sideways to siblings or diagonally out to, you know, cousins or aunts and uncles, that sort of thing, those parties you can deal with, but just not your immediate family, you know, again, on that family tree. So that's an important thing to understand, because you don't want to run afoul of these rules, because if you do what's called a prohibited transaction, that can actually, your retirement account can lose its tax exempt status if you were to engage in a transaction with one of these parties. So it's an important line in the sand to know where it is, and then know to not even slip a toe over that line. Now, for most people, it's not a big deal because they're not planning on doing investments with themselves or with their family anyway. But it is an important thing, especially with real estate, and especially as maybe you get out and start partnering up with people or lending money back and forth to do different deals. You just have to make sure that you're not doing it with one of these parties. So that was a good question that you had, Prashant, because that's an important, again, you know, set of restrictions that everybody needs to know before they, you know, get into a structure like this.
How are the returns treated?
So the returns are, just like, let's say, buying a stock and then selling it for twice the money, or having dividends come back to an IRA off of a stock. The income that is going to come back to the IRA is typically going to be in the form of rents or maybe lease income, asset appreciation, maybe if you're dealing with like a syndication. All of those forms of income are tax exempt to the IRA. So as the income comes back, let's say with a rental, let's say you bought a long-term rental, obviously the value of the property is probably going to be climbing each year. And as the rents are paid back to the IRA LLC each month, that just simply increases the value of the account, but that's not a taxable event. And one thing that I'll say too, because the LLC is owned by a tax exempt, you know, retirement plan, and because the LLC is a flow through entity, meaning that unlike a corporation, it's not filing its own tax return and paying its own separate tax. What really happens is as the LLC profits, and as the profits come back and the account grows and grows and grows, the tax liability for those profits pass up to the IRA and are essentially canceled out by the tax exempt nature of the IRA that owns the plan. So now there are some forms of income that you can be taxed on, and that really deals with business income or like if you're financing property through an IRA. And we can certainly talk about how that's figured. You know, for most clients, they're not interested in owning a business with their retirement plan. So for most clients, that's not really an issue. But if you do finance property, there can be some tax on the profits that are made from that financed investment. Do you want me to go through the financing stuff, or do you want me to go into the 401k stuff, Prashant?
I think in the interest of time, maybe we can jump on to 401k.
Okay.
Because that's something is very powerful in my mind. And hopefully if we have time left after that, maybe we can talk about financing. If we
sure.
I have a quick question around IRA as far as just the technical, like let's say you want to do an investment with your IRA money and your wife's IRA money. Do you have to keep it separate? Also, like Roth IRA versus traditional IRA, you know, do you have to keep all that type, like those type of investments separate, or can you kind of meld them all together?
Yeah, that's a good question. So husband and wife money is a little more complicated because they are prohibited parties to each other because they are married. So typically, it's not a good idea to try to combine funds between a husband and wife or between spouses, just because you run into such a minefield that you have to kind of tiptoe through the tulips, you know, to stay on the right side of compliance. It's not to say that it can't be done, but that really is a kind of a case by case thing. So I'm certainly happy to chat with you, Ben, if you have some questions on that, like based on your situation, there may be some ways around that. Now, with like a traditional and a Roth IRA, if they're both your accounts, then that's a little bit different because you own both accounts. So there really isn't that complication there with the spouse. So there are ways to combine those into one. For example, you can set up an LLC that's partly owned by the traditional and partly owned by the Roth, and then go ahead and make investments at the LLC level and grow the account. It's a little bit more complex down the road when you go to take distributions, but it certainly can be done, and we have clients that do it. And one thing I would say too, my feeling is typically that it's best to separate out the accounts so that each IRA owns its own LLC, mainly because the LLC, you don't necessarily want the LLC to have multiple owners, because then it becomes a partnership and you've got to file a return for it. And it also gets complex, you know, with partnership with two kinds of money in there, trying to get money out of it. So again, it can be done, but for most clients, I suggest that it's best to go ahead and separate those out. But one clarification that I do want to make is that there's no reason why, again, like for a syndication deal, there's no reason why you couldn't take traditional and Roth monies and invest in the same deal. It's really only when you're trying sort of in the background to try to get the traditional and the Roth or the husband and wife money put together to then go do, let's say, one transaction, that's where things get complicated. So hopefully that distinction is clear, that you can certainly invest in the same deal depending. But it's really trying to combine the funds into one entity or into one sort of glob of money to go do a deal. That's where it gets really complex. And again, not to say it can't be done, but that really is kind of a case by case thing. So does that answer your question, Ben?
Yeah, that's super helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, you betcha. Now, let's go into the 401k, because Ben, this is going to be interesting for people who have questions like you did about combining a spousal money, because within a 401k, you can actually do that. And this is one of the reasons why, if you can qualify for the 401k and legitimately qualify for it, it really is kind of the Rolls Royce of these kinds of structures. Now, I'm not going to spend time going through all this other than to say a 401k also is a revocable trust. So just keep that in mind. Now, here is, in my opinion, one of the coolest things about the 401k. Aside from the fact that the contribution limits are much, much higher, as they are with a 401k, because it's a employer or company sponsored plan. And so as a result, your ability to contribute to the 401k is now tied to your self-employment income. And as a result, you can put in a lot more into a 401k than you can into an IRA, which we'll go through what the limits are here in a minute. But this right here is, in my opinion, the coolest part. And that is that unlike an IRA, which by law you must have held by a third party custodian, That is not the case with a 401k, because a 401k is a qualified plan. It's a different animal, and it has different requirements for this sort of thing. So with a 401k, you don't have to have a third party hold the plan. You actually get to hold the plan yourself and serve as trustee to the 401k trust that is set up, you know, for the plan. And there's kind of a trickle down effect for that that makes pretty much everything you do a lot easier. So here's how it would look. Over on the left, you'd have your business entity. Now, again, I should stop here and mention that the 401k is only going to work if you have some self-employment income. Even if it's, let's say, just some side gig income, it doesn't have to be full-time self-employment. But if you have ongoing self-employment activity and income, you would qualify to set up a solo K. And I should say the other thing that's required is that you cannot have any full-time W-2 employees that work for you. Because if you do, then the plan has to cover them as well. Then it's no longer a solo K, and that just defeats the whole purpose. Mm-hmm. So with that in mind, the typical arrangement would be over on the left, you'd have your business, which could be anything from a formal entity like a corp or an LLC, but it could also be a sole proprietorship. Right. So if you have some side gig income and you're a sole proprietor and you don't have employees that work for you, you would qualify to set up a solo K. So your business then sponsors and creates this retirement plan, the 401k. And instead of handing it to a Fidelity or to a self-directed custodian, you actually get to serve as trustee of the plan and control everything yourself. And so as a result, what happens is, not only do you not have a third-party custodian to deal with, but you also don't need to set up some extra LLC, because with the IRA structure, since you can't hold the IRA directly, you must set up the LLC to get that checkbook control. That's really the only way to do it. But with a 401k, you don't have to do that because you've pushed the custodian out the door and you stepped into their place. So now, as the trustee of the 401k trust, as you roll money into that trust and you make future contributions, since you're the trustee, you control that 401k plan. So now you're in a position where if you want to buy real estate or you want to make some loans or buy some crypto or something like that, you just make those investments directly out of the 401k plan itself. And whatever might be involved in doing that, you just get to do yourself as the trustee. So it's really a way of bypassing the whole idea of a third-party custodian. And as you can see here, there are fewer moving parts, less parties to deal with. And it's just more a much more direct way of doing it. So here's some of the basic advantages. Obviously, you get to hold the plan yourself. There's no third party involved. You have much, much higher contribution limits. If you're under 50, you're going to max out at 58,000. If you're over 50, you get a catch up and it's 64,500. You can roll any retirement account into the 401k with two exceptions, the Roth IRA and any sort of like inherited IRA or inherited 401k. So traditional IRAs, SEP IRAs, simple IRAs, old 401ks, 403bs, 457s, you know, any of those that you can imagine, those can roll into this solo 401k. The other thing is there's a Roth 401k component built into it. So it's almost like you've got a built-in Roth IRA inside of your 401k. And I don't want to rabbit hole on that too much other than to say there's a lot of really cool stuff that can be done with that Roth 401k. And it allows you to save if you like an after-tax account and you like to build that sort of money, it's going to allow you to build the, you know, Roth money at a much faster clip than you can with like a Roth IRA. You can take a personal loan from your own 401k, which many of you are going to be familiar with if you've worked for a company that offered a plan. So that's kind of a cool thing where you can slip money out to yourself and it's not taxable, have personal use of it for up to 5 years, and then essentially pay interest back to your own 401k plan. So that's pretty cool. And let me see if I've got, here we go. So, you know, investing in collectibles, most clients don't do that. That's kind of an interesting thing that if you're into that sort of thing, you could buy collectibles with a properly set up 401k. But like Ben, with what you were asking, if we look at the second point here, just like any other 401k, like if you worked with for a company that had 100 employees and that for, that company offered a 401k plan, that what you would have is one 401k that 100 different people are all participating in at the same time. Now, when you bring this down to the micro level with a solo 401k, because it is a solo 401k, because there are no outside employees that the plan is covering, the plan really just covers the owner or the owners of the business. So if spouses, let's say, owned an LLC half and half or whatever the percentage, or if they were both in a S corp or something like that, and they were running a business and they didn't have employees, now you're able to set up a 401k and the both spouses can participate in the plan. Both spouses can roll their money into the same plan and also contribute going forward. And the cool thing is that the structure of the 401k, all the complications I was talking about before, about trying to combine the money and all that goes out the window. Because within the one 401k plan, each spouse can go off and do their own thing, right? So the husband goes off and buys real estate, the wife holds some crypto, and everybody does their own thing. But you can also, within the plan, combine those funds and go make an investment of those combined funds. Now there, of course, you have to track the equity, right? So if it's 50-50 or 70-30, you do have to make sure that those profits track back according to that original equity split. But that's more of like an administrative thing that you as the trustee would just make a notation of. And then when the profits come back, you would just split them off, you know, internally within the plan to each spousal account. So it opens up some opportunities there for spouses to combine their funds just for either for convenience or increased purchasing power, and not have to worry about all the complications like with IRAs, where you've got to, again, like I said, tiptoe through the tulips to try to stay compliant. The structure of the 401k lets you do that without having to worry about that. And then the other thing I would say that is pretty important, especially for real estate, like with what you guys are looking at, you can finance real estate inside of a 401k, just like you can inside of an IRA, but the difference is this. The what's called the unrelated debt finance income tax that applies to IRAs, where part of the profits from that finance property are going to be subject to tax and the IRA is going to have to pay tax on that. The 401k actually, all 401ks, it's not just solo Ks, but 401ks enjoy a blanket exemption across the board that UDFI, this debt finance tax, does not apply to any financed real estate transactions. Now, this is especially handy if you're, again, doing some sort of a syndication investment, because if there's financing at the entity level that is, let's say, building a huge project, that actually is going to pass through and be subject, like if you have an IRA, you're going to have tax involved there. Whereas with the 401k, you just don't have to worry about that. You know, the 401k is, and that's just sort of the tip of the iceberg of some of the differences between the 401k and IRA. But the 401k and being a qualified plan, because it is a different animal, because you have employee rights involved and so forth, it just frankly just provides kind of a richer landscape for different options that you can do within the plan. And of course, the self-dealing stuff is exactly the same for 401ks. So as the trustee of the 401k trust, again, make sure the trust is not dealing with yourself or with your parents or your kids or anything like that. So it's all the same rules there that we talked about. And I guess I'll just leave it there for the 401k, because again, I could rabbit hole in like 20 different directions and we'll all fall asleep before I get done. So, I mean, we can go into the UBIT and the UDFI, I mean, if you want to, Prashant, but I mean, if you want, we can open it up to questions and do that if you'd like.
So I have a question, Jordan. For solo 401k, we said that we can invest, right? We can invest or we can buy property owned by solo 401k. Is it possible to commingle funds, you know, solo 401k funds as well as after tax money to buy a property, are there any restrictions on that?
So when you mean commingle funds, you mean you're not talking about personal funds, right? And mixing them with the 401k's money?
I'm talking about that, yes. If I want to buy a property, you know, worth, let's say $200,000, and I need $30,000, can I bring $15,000 from solo 401k and $15,000 from my personal account? Is that a possibility? Is it a prohibited transaction?
Yeah, so here we're on thin ice. I would say it is possible. There is a certain way to do that. Essentially, you would have to buy the property as tenants in common, so that both you and the 401k would be on the deed. You would also have to make sure that after you buy the property that you would have absolutely no involvement whatsoever in the management or anything involving the property, mainly because any sort of anything there, because you're on the other side of the deed, is going to automatically create a problem. So, I mean, that can be done if you're comfortable with that, and if you're fine with having a third party just handle everything on the property as far as management and utilities and rents and so forth. That sort of thing can be done. Sometimes you can do it by setting up an LLC that's partly owned by yourself, partly owned by the 401k. Again, I almost hate to mention that because you really get off into, kind of a minefield. And for some people, they have a risk tolerance where they're willing to do that. And they're willing to, frankly, it's not so much risk tolerance. It's more a matter of having the right people involved to make sure that it's done correctly. And just kind of the necessary expense that a lot of times comes with that. So it can be done. It's kind of a specialty kind of thing, but it certainly can be done. I don't know that I would suggest it, but it can be done. Yeah.
Got it. Okay. Yeah, I know it is a little bit more complicated than just buying it from solo 401k only. So I just, if you want to, looks like folks don't have any questions. If you want to maybe spend a couple of minutes on UDFI and UBIT, you know, that would be helpful.
Well, I have a quick question here. I am interested on the UBIT a little bit also, but basically, like right now I'm doing most of my 401k investment into my company's 401k. Do you suggest that, and I also have, you know, funds coming in on the side from rentals. Would it be best to shift those, like, those funds into a retirement account and use those to invest in more properties or?
Right. So now, is part of your question like, hey, should I stop like contributing to my company 401k and like shift my attention more in like a self-directed type direction? Is that kind of the general gist of it?
Yeah.
So that's a good question. Precisely. I mean, that's a hard one to answer because everyone's situation is going to be different. I mean, if you work for a company and you're given the option to contribute to the company plan, I mean, that's not necessarily ever a bad thing because you're, first of all, getting the write-off. And then secondly, you are, you know, capturing that money in a retirement plan for your own benefit. So I don't know that that's ever a bad thing. Although sometimes if the account is so severely limited on what you can invest in, then sometimes it can become maybe a minus, you know, if that doesn't fit in with your overall investment stuff. So I would say that it depends on like your business income. Like if you had enough business income where if you looked at what you were earning now, like on the side through just other activities that you're doing, it may end up being that if you set up, let's say, a solo 401k, that you would be able to contribute a larger amount of your income than you are now to your company 401k, although maybe not, you know. So I hate to punt on that question, but that might be one that, like, if you wanted to talk on the phone and kind of run through your specific situation and see what would kind of shake out as being most effective for you, I'd be happy to talk about that.
Perfect. But that sounds good. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely something that a lot of people kind of have to make a decision on, like, well, I'm doing it this way, and now what do I need to do to shift? And is that going to work, or is it going to make sense for what I'm doing? So I'm certainly happy to kind of walk through that on a personal basis with you, Ben.
Okay, that sounds good. Thank you.
Yeah, you bet. So what you see up here, these are the two exceptions to the non-taxability of retirement accounts. These are the two ways that profits from a transaction to a retirement account can be subject to tax. The second one is any time that any retirement account, and the term they use in the code is acquisition indebtedness, right? So, and this would apply, for example, even in like a kind of a more normal scenario, like if you had a retirement account with a brokerage firm and you wanted to trade something on margin, I mean, essentially what you're doing is borrowing money or borrowing stock from the broker. And as a result, you would actually trigger this UDFI tax on the profits from that trade. Day traders run into this, like guys that trade Forex inside of a retirement account because they're so highly leveraged will run into this tax. In fact, so much so that most of the time you just don't want to trade Forex inside of a retirement account. But the first one is kind of, it's called the unrelated business income tax. And it's a tax, and actually both of these taxes apply to all tax exempt entities, right? So to be clear, this is not like a retirement account specific tax. So anything from a church to a charity, to a foundation, to a university, and then all the way over to retirement accounts are going to be subject to this tax. Now, actually, I'll just switch up here real quick. So UBIT is the main section that deals with tax to tax exempt entities. And then this UDFI is actually a subsection of this UBIT. I mean, not that that matters, but just in case you care about that. So essentially this UBIT was, this was legislation that was passed in response to a concern that Congress had that certain large tax exempt entities, the Catholic Church, were engaging, essentially they were buying businesses, because they didn't pay any tax, they were lowering their prices, running competitors out of business, and then buying them up. And it was kind of a scandal in the 50s. So as a result, they came out with this legislation that said, look, if you're a tax-exempt entity, we're not going to let you just go off and own businesses and earn all sorts of money and never pay tax, because that's not fair to the people you're competing against. So they instituted this tax, and it's triggered when, specifically for a retirement account, when the retirement account incurs any sort of actual business income. Now, business income would be active income as opposed to passive income, right? So passive income would be things like, well, you can see the list here, rents, lease money, interest income, royalties, interestingly enough, for like intellectual property. All of those passive types of income are not subject to this UBIT. But on the other hand, if the retirement account, you know, owns a restaurant, or if it's like a good example would be, let's say you bought a bunch of heavy equipment, you know, backhoes and graders and all that sort of thing, and you started renting or leasing them out on like a day-to-day basis. Well, at that point, you're running a lease company. Right? I mean, you're running an equipment company and leasing and renting this stuff out to the public. That is a business activity. And therefore, the nature of the income coming back to the plan is active income and not passive income. Now, again, for most clients, they're not really looking to do anything like that. So UBIT is typically not that huge of a concern for them. And generally for real estate, you're not really going to run into this kind of income, you know, because most of your income is going to be on this list here, rents or lease payments or interest if you're, let's say, loaning on property. Now, I will say this, you do not want to trigger this tax. And the reason why is because retirement accounts are trusts. And so if you trigger this tax, you're going to pay tax at the trust rate, which I think once you get over 12,000, it's something like 39.7%. So obviously that just negates all the reasons why you would do it through a retirement account. But I will say that generally these kinds of investments not always, but a lot of times they can be structured ahead of time so that no tax will be due. So just keep that in mind. I mean, if something comes up and it is a business activity, we're happy to kind of walk you through some different ways that you can structure it so that the form of the income coming back to the plan is passive income and not active income. And then, for the debt finance, again, it just applies when a retirement account has acquisition indebtedness on any investment it does. Although keep in mind that 401ks are exempt from that for any leveraged real estate stuff. And that's it.
I had one super quick question about the UBIT around syndications. Do you typically see that in a syndication or not? Like those type of taxes, do you have to worry about them?
The only time with syndication is if the client is investing with an IRA, and if the syndication is acquiring debt, like maybe it's a general partnership or something, and the general partner is, let's say, personally guaranteeing a large note on an apartment building or complex or something like that. There is a look-through rule where the IRS will essentially say, well, because there was financing on the syndication and because the IRA invested in that syndication, we're going to look through and we're going to treat it as if the IRA itself acquired the debt. So in that situation, just be aware if you're investing with an IRA and if there's debt involved in that deal, you will, or the IRA will be subject to that tax. Now that's not the case with 401ks, so it's not so much UBIT, it's more the financing tax that comes into play. I see with those larger deals, because most of the time they are financed in some way. Now, having said that, I will say this, a couple of years ago, the IRS came out with some exceptions to that rule. And a lot of syndications are not quite up to speed on setting things up so that they qualify for that exemption, but some of them are. And I think over time, we'll see more and more of that as well. So hopefully over time, more and more of these deals, as we see more and more self-directed money come into the real estate industry and into these deals, my hope is that more companies will spend a little bit more time and effort and money to set things up so that IRA investors would be exempt from that finance tax. But right now, that's fairly rare.
So Jordan, who is responsible? I mean, if the return comes, if we exit from the deal, return comes to the IRA custodian. Is it custodian who is responsible to do the filing or notify IRS? Typically, we don't do any filing for those self-directed IRA
accounts. Yeah, good question. So the next to last bullet point here, since retirement accounts are trusts, and since it is the retirement account that would be triggering this tax, you would file a 990-T. Now, the custodians don't do this for you, so you would have to have a CPA, and we have a list that I can certainly send anyone who's interested that works, in this field, or of CPAs that work in this field. But a 990-T or a trust return would need to be filed on the account to calculate the tax due. And then the retirement account itself would be responsible for paying that tax. So you don't pay that out of pocket. That is a tax to the retirement account itself.
Thank you so much, folks. You. Appreciate your time and be well. And we'll connect with you soon.